hand washing, social distancing, fired employees, air transmission. 4 long years ago, the 195 nations lived together in disharmony. Then everything changed when COVID lockdowns attacked. How did these change our culture? And how did our reality's upheaval affect our enjoyment of fictional worlds?
Speculative fiction, like no other genre, reflects the creativity of God.
If you look at the scriptures, you're going to have to see that God uses imagination more than rational discourse.
We are supposed to be image bearers for a vastly creative God.
Reading fantastical fiction opened a portal in my imagination for a place other than just a materialistic world.
I experienced the gospel story with the mind of someone who loved adventure and loved the idea of light conquering darkness.
We're wired for stories that reflect how we see the world in ways that are true.
The story is either pointing to Christ or it's pointing to our need for Christ.
Welcome back to Fantastical Truth, the non-lockdown free podcast from lorehaven.com in which we explore fantastical stories for God's glory. And I'm Stephen Burnett, the publisher of Lorehaven and co-author of The Pop Culture Parent.
And I'm Zachary Russell, and I just dusted off my copy of Pandemic, the board game, because I think it's safe to play that now. And this is episode 202, 4 years later, how did pandemic lockdowns change our reading experience?
Zach, I believe that all of the etiquette experts agree that 4 long years later, it is now safe for the whole family to make jokes about lockdowns and viruses and disasters and all of this. I myself am not nostalgic for those days. I think there was a lot of good that did come out of the pandemic lockdowns, but a lot of bad too. And some of that has been just the fact that I think increasingly now, and I'm just going to blame lockdowns because I can, it is more difficult to read stuff, and it's more difficult to find good books, and there's been a lot of upheaval in the publishing world, but just in our reading habits too. So I thought, you know what, on this most august of anniversaries, let's take a moment and look back on how lockdowns changed our reading experience, and how can we maybe change back?
This has very much the feeling of in memoriam. We're remembering not only what we've gone through, but kind of how we were different 4 years ago, before, during, and after the lockdowns. It feels like dog years, you know. It feels like it's been 28 years in human years. Quite a bit has changed, and quite a number of things have happened. And I really like that we're going to be talking about reading today, because I've been thinking a lot about my reading habits before, during, and now after the dark years, and how some things have changed for the better and some for the worse, and I'm trying to change what's gotten bad.
Yeah, I thought about this myself a moment ago when I realized, and I don't think this is lockdown's fault necessarily, but I had gotten a new book. I might describe what it is later, and I was trying to read it, and this ridiculous little notification kept pinging me saying, "Hey, check your phone, check your phone, check your phone." It was not the phone's notification. It was mine. It was an ingrained habit. And a faithful listener, I'll bet you have that too. Please do not faithfully listen to that notification. Unless it's an emergency, you can stick with your book. You can read the whole page, the whole paragraph, maybe even the whole chapter without checking your phone. And that's what I had to make myself do, even as a mature Christian adult. This is a constant temptation. And I think that the phone makers maybe want you to feel that. And we'll get into that more in our discussion. There is, however, a place on your phone that you can go that is a good place, a healthy place, and you can manage your notifications. That is the Lorehaven Guild, our Discord community, in which we undertake monthly book quests of the best Christian-made fantastical novels that we can find. As of this episode release date, we have started our March 2024 book quest into North or Be Eaten, which is the Wingfeather Saga Book 2 by Andrew Peterson. I think they've started the second season of the Wingfeather Saga TV show this month, so we timed our book quest accordingly, but you can only join the guild by subscribing free at lorehaven.com. Then we send you the secret access code there. We can also notify you, if you like, about new podcast episodes, reviews, and articles and such. You may also want to follow our Lorehaven library, where we share any of the Christian-made fantastical novels that we know about that qualify for listing in the library, including a new novel from our top sponsor, Enclave Publishing, called Guardian by Kathy McCrum. The Recorder's fate has been sealed, but the Consortium is not the only enemy. Labeled an aberration by the Consortium, The recorder is not yet free. Time is running out as an engineered bioweapon, and there it is again, freaks havoc on friend and foe alike. Stopping both the biological agent and the people who created it is no easy task, especially since the recorder and her friends are trapped on a research station infested with behemoth insects. Without consortium technology, the probability of neutralizing the threat falls to nothing. In order to save her allies, the recorder must activate a drone, but her success might destroy any hope for freedom, a future, and a name. Enclave presents Guardian by Kathy McCrum. This is book three in the Children of the Consortium series, and it's on sale today wherever great books are sold. It's also available as a digital audiobook on Audible, Spotify, and through libraries everywhere. You can get those links, see the cover, all that good stuff in the show notes for episode 202, or go to lorehaven.com/podcast. Zach, I can concur. You can get those books in the library because my wife and I actually went to the new downtown library. At least it's new to us in our city. We had not been there ever since it opened. I'm not sure how, just time got away from us. And I actually saw Kathy McCrum's first book there, Recorder, listed in the fantasy and sci-fi section. So it's always nice to see books that we actually promote on the show found in the wild like that.
I've been bringing my kids to that library like every other week. And so that place is fantastic. It's just such a huge library. It's three stories and a really good selection. And probably my favorite thing I've discovered, we'll talk about this later, are the audiobooks and the little playaway audio devices they have, which I'll talk about later.
I do want to hear more about that because I did see that shelf full of those things and it makes me want to try some out. I'm kind of picky about books, if you couldn't tell already, even pickier than Lorehaven, actually, which is why I am but the humble publisher. Everybody else is reading almost all the books that we review, but I need to broaden my tastes sometimes and especially ignore those notifications that keep me from reading the good stuff. Say, it was my birthday recently and we still have some leftover cake. I think I'll pass that out along with our concession stand here. First of all, yeah, some people here talk about lockdowns and viruses and bioweapons and such, but this, as I'd like to say, is not a political show. I think, Zach, at least in terms of policy, all that stuff is kind of wrapped up, and you can probably guess who won there. A good hint is that Zach and I are not having to wear masks everywhere we go outdoors. Maybe that was a temporary good thing. Maybe it wasn't. That debate is outside the frame of the show, so if you want to debate that stuff, go listen to a podcast episode from the year 2021. Although I must say that the one episode that Zach and I did about the vaccine for COVID-19 was actually, which number was that here? Let me pull it up real quick. I think episode 71, something like that. We made an episode about the vaccine. It wasn't about the vaccine. We instead interpreted it as a parable. You know, if the vaccine worked and you could take an injection or whatever and then get an immunity from a disease, why then would you go back to the other stuff like masks and social distancing? And we compared that to the rules that are now fulfilled by Christ. And so maybe that's the first and last time you ever heard a podcast compare Jesus to the vaccine. That's also apart from, you know, other debates about the vaccine, but we have covered this stuff before. This one's this episode's a little bit different. I will say, though, Zach and I have been reminiscing a little bit. The lockdowns did shape this podcast because we started Fantastical Truth, just recently hit 200 episodes back in January of 2020. And then, you know, 7-8 short weeks later, we had to change our recording tactics because of all the lockdowns and stuff. And do cast your imagination back then. We didn't know whether this was one of the dystopian virus pandemic, you know, zombie plagues come to life, or whether it was just a particularly annoying flash in the pan. We didn't know. You didn't know either. Nobody knew. So we can cut the forebears there some slack because of ignorance. But that did change what Lorehaven did. Like, I even phased out the print copy of the magazine that we were doing every quarter. And yet we still have the legacy of that and did force us to try some new things. So I think despite all the nonsense and suffering, even on a global scale, my theology, as well as some of what I see, does remind me that despite all the bad stuff, God did mean this for good one way or another. I don't want to say that with some kind of sentimentalism that denies the bad stuff in reality. But I think we can put our faith in him and have confidence that even when he allows things like that, he does have good reason. And so I think that that feeling will shape this show. We'll reflect that sense of positivity as we explore more specifically, how did the lockdowns and all of that affect how we read and why we read and how can we maybe fix some bad habits that we picked up or double down on some good habits that we picked up?
I just want to go to the news briefly here. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It's official. We can pretty much treat COVID like the flu now. Here's a guide. And then it goes on to say, quote, a case of COVID no longer means isolating for 5 days, according to the latest guidance from the CDC. End quote. This is just from Friday, I believe, March 1st, 2024.
Oh, yeah. It's another birthday gift for me. Thanks, CDC. Yeah. I appreciate the breaking news. Hot take there.
Yeah. And it says just follow the same precautions as you would with the flu. And, you know, what a tangled web that we've all gone through to get to this point when from the very beginning people said, oh, it's just a cold, it's just a flu, don't freak out. And all those people were shouted down as conspiracy theorists, and we did not listen to them as we should. And, you know, Stephen, I definitely was very precautious that first year. And
I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
And understandably, too. Give yourself a little slack, brother. I'll give me some, too.
But the one thing I tried to do was not second guess what other people decided to do. And I remember this one time going to church and someone said, you know, I nearly lost my business and we nearly got evicted or something, nearly lost everything in my family. But I also had COVID where I had to go to the ER, and I would rather have COVID again than almost lose everything. And I thought,
wow.
Okay, that really puts it in perspective. And I thought about that all year. But for me, what I also had to think about was that I think I had the original COVID alpha, whatever, in January of 2020. I went
December of 2019 for me. Worst disease I ever had.
I had all the symptoms of like I lost my sense of smell or taste, and a fever that lasted weeks, a cough that it started out really dry, and I couldn't breathe and kept having try all these different inhalers. Thankfully, I had been given some steroids and an antibiotic, which I think kept my lungs from collapsing because I was in horrible shape, lost a ton of weight that I didn't really need to lose. And, you know, after getting over that a few weeks later, I thought that was in January. And then in March, when all the lockdowns happened, I thought, well, if that wasn't COVID, and COVID's worse than that, then I don't want COVID. But if that was COVID, I don't want it again. And of course, we were being gaslit this whole year about natural immunity. And anytime you try to search for stuff, a lot of information was censored. It was very difficult to find clear answers. And so again, I bring up this article now where it says, oh, you don't even have to isolate for 5 days. Well, it wasn't too long ago you had to isolate for 15 days. Or 10 days, or, you know, it keeps coming down. And so I just want to acknowledge the frustration that probably a lot of our listeners must feel reading this article. If you were, you know, if you listener were someone that said, hey, don't freak out about this, you feel vindicated. You know, I hope you feel vindicated by this news. You know, again, for me, I took it a lot more cautiously, and I had a coworker pass away, sadly, from COVID. And again, they didn't really know how to treat it. And that was a whole other thing where the treatment guidelines were terrible and very restrictive for a lot of political reasons we won't go into. And there's a lot of other political changes that happened we won't go into, but there were some cultural changes that we'll get into in a minute because they do relate to publishing. So we will talk a little bit about sort of the publishing culture, the book culture, and how that relates to where we find ourselves today.
Any global event like that is going to shape the culture for certain. A close comparison, well, maybe not a close comparison, but another comparison I think would be World War II. If you think about World War II back in the 1940s, without World War II, we would almost assuredly not have Tolkien's and Lewis's work, either nonfiction or fiction, or it would have certainly taken different form. Now, Tolkien and Lewis both fought in World War I, and then they were civilians during World War II, but they're reliving a whole lot of that stuff that they went through now from the civilian side, you know, fighting on the home front. And I'm certain that their motivation to create new things, and I'm guessing then too that their motivation to read, to study, you know, to double down on the good habits that they had were shaped by this world event. COVID, I think, doesn't really compare to that, not even the lockdowns and the controversies. And yet, even this comparatively lower key event is going to shape a lot of things. And among them, I think, for the Christian individual, this leads us to chapter one here, I would say that lockdowns did ultimately help drive Christ's people closer to him. I have felt that, and that's a bit subjective, but I wonder how many of our listeners might be able to sympathize with that and might be able, once they think about it, maybe in hindsight, and go, yeah, you know what? Like, I think I actually do feel stronger in my faith and closer to Jesus personally than I did before. One element, I think, of the lockdowns and all of the, some of the panic and some of the legitimate fear that I think is just a very deeply human thing, is just the fact that humans altogether are haunted by our own mortality. I mean, even Christians who have an answer to death, you know, we know the only one who has defeated death, and we expect eternal life in the new heavens and new earth after a short stint in heaven on the way. Even we struggle with that feeling of being haunted by mortality. Like, death is always around the corner. With his Sith, and one of these days, like, every single one of us is going to fall victim to his sting. It is appointed unto man once to die, scripture tells us. And so I think that when there is something big like this, that draws all of those hauntings out of us. We feel like we have to have some kind of apocalypse. We have to have some kind of disaster, either as a scapegoat or as an outlet for those feelings. And while there's a lot of harm that results from that, especially if you're just a materialist who doesn't know anything about the one who's conquered death, that can be very bad. But I think, too, it's almost very healthy to be confronted by your own mortality like that. I mean, we I'm sure if we think about it, know people who, because of COVID, because of suffering, because of even just the tangential upheaval of losing your career or having to move to another state or switch jobs or something, like, we know that God has used that to bring people to himself, to save souls, to get them into a local church, and to help change lives. Like, I'm already in a local church at the time, and, you know, like any church, we had to figure out what we're going to do. Are we going to do, you know, services long distance all the time, or are we going to try to get back together as soon as we can? We ended up going for the latter option, and I'm very glad we did. But we did lose, yeah, there was an elderly chap that was going to our church. His name was Hank, and he caught the bug. And just like anyone who's very elderly, I mean, Hank was a Korean War veteran and everything. He had so many stories to tell, and I wish I'd had more time to get to know him. But he had complications relating from that, and whether or not they treated him right, I don't know. But he was in his 90s, and then, you know, a few days later, Hank had gone on to heaven. And so we wish we could have spent more time with him. But there were many good reasons, though, that came out of this to in some way appreciate at least part of the lockdowns for helping us remember that we really are mortal. And I myself felt like I want to make better use of the time than I have been. And it started, you know, before we talk about reading and all of that, I think it started just with me trying to think more seriously, even more seriously than before, about the right value of the local church, the need to read scripture, you know, trying to read the Bible at least once every year and study it, the need to obey Christ actively, knowing that it's him who's working in us to change us to be like himself. Like, it doesn't end with those more obviously spiritual things, but it certainly starts with those. And I must say, Zach, that I think I can say this with some confidence. I don't make fun of or shy away from the church greeting time anymore. I seem to have learned my lesson, at least for now, and I'd like to keep a good habit of just going around and being completely, you know, it's a little bit of a performance, yeah, especially if you're someone who's a little bit introverted, but I want to shake hands, I want to say hello to people, I want to remember names, and I want to find the visitors and welcome them in, and I don't even really want to share a parody article now making fun of the church greeting time. I think that it is a very good thing, and especially after the lockdowns, I really missed it during the lockdowns, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to use this. I'm not just going to forget that I missed it. I'm going to use this and hopefully enjoy church greeting time forever after.
You know, I think going back a little bit to the concession stand, but in the spirit of this chapter of what how we've been brought close to Christ, something I realized early on, Stephen, and this was with the help of John Piper in a book I'm going to quote from in a moment, is that the easy thing to do is to look at politicians who we want to blame, or look at ones that we think are going to get us out of whatever mess.
Right. Savior or doomcaster, the politician is the scapegoat either way there.
Yeah. And I think it's an easy way to try to make sense of the world and try to find someone responsible to, you know, prosecute or to congratulate. And really what it is we are wrestling with the sovereignty of God, because what we're asking is, how did this happen? Right. So we can look at all the human actors and what they should have done differently. But really what we're saying is, why didn't God do something differently? Like, if we believe in an all-powerful God, then why did all this happen? And you know, that is a very deep question that I think we offload at times to politics. But John Piper's book, Coronavirus and Christ, someone recommended this book really early on in 2020 to me, and I'm so glad they did. I read the whole thing in like 2 days. And it's not a very long book, and I think it's even free. But there's two quotes I want to pull from here. He says, "Knowing that the same sovereignty that could stop the coronavirus yet doesn't is the same sovereignty that sustains the soul in it. In other words, if we try to rescue God from his sovereignty over suffering, we sacrifice his sovereignty to turn all things for good." And later in the book, he says, "God put the physical world under a curse so that the physical horrors we see around us in diseases and calamities would become a vivid picture of how horrible sin is." In other words, physical evil is a parable, a drama, a signpost pointing to the moral outrage of rebellion against God. And he also quotes from when Jesus is asked by his disciples, "Well, why did all these people die in this tower or get killed by Pilate?" And Jesus doesn't really answer that. He says, "If you do not repent, you too will perish." He gets us. Right?
Had to say it one more time, y'all.
But man, Stephen, this whole idea that God could have stopped coronavirus, but he didn't. So why not? Well, he wants it to play out to bring to light what we often overlook, which is our own sin, and because it's hidden from us, that especially sins of pride and greed and self-reliance, you know, and really the sin of isolationism. I think, as you said, we became so content with not greeting our neighbor, just going to church, checking the box, going home. And then of course, we all started going to TV church, which I really began to hate after a few months. And again, it's like God is handing us over to our sins of screen time addiction. Like, "Oh, you want more screen time? Here you go. You're going to have everything through a screen. How do you like that?" But I love Piper's point that this is a, you know, all of the suffering that God was allowing to happen was a vivid picture of how horrible sin is. It was a drama. You know, it really was an awful time. Just whether you got sick or had someone sick, whether you were locked down or couldn't be with people that were locked down, you couldn't travel. You know, we all were so inundated by news all the time. And yet, what God was doing in that was drawing us deeper into repentance to get more of our hearts to him. And that's a wonderful thing. I think we, you know, I've looked at some other things that have happened since then. Like in 2019, it was one of the best years of our economy in a long time. And it's not really been great since then. But again, God is working through that to break us of the idols in our culture, to break us of our personal idols, to get more of ourselves back to him.
You know, back in September of 2020, that's when my nonfiction book came out. It would have originally come out in May. In fact, I still have some souvenir postcards that have the May release date for the Pop Culture Parent on there. 2 months earlier, the lockdowns happened, and that interfered with supply lines, and it made it more difficult to print books, and it just threw everything out of whack. And so I really was annoyed by that, but not as long as you might think, I think, because that summer I was able to start doing a lot of other things. And then God led my wife and me to do some foster care starting in that fall. So literally in 1 month, the book came out, we moved to another house, and we started doing foster care. It was absolute madness, but I think even in the middle of it, I remember thinking, this is going to feel really great after it's over. It's going to be a really great thing to say on the podcast someday. So maybe I was thinking even that far ahead. We're not yet at the 4-year anniversary of that, but I group it all together in that one year of hell, 2020. Not the most fun year, but certainly with challenges that led to growth. And I definitely know that I felt my faith being strengthened then during that. And it's just been marvelous to look back on. And then, again, I don't want to paint too rosy a picture, but I must say, too, I think I've had the actual thing, COVID, maybe 3 times, I think. And this is what's so annoying. And more than annoying, if you, faithful listener, have actually suffered from this thing, you know, like Zach was describing earlier, or like apparently I had in a December of 2019 also. If you had it, or if you lost a relative to it, or lost a business, or had some suffering, then I don't mean to gloss over that. But I do feel a little survivor guilt here, in that every time I had the COVID and I had to stay home from my day job, I got so much stuff done. Because for me, it wasn't even as, you know, that kind of sick, cozy feeling you get with a certain kind of cold where you're just racked with chills and you can just lie around in bed all day and watch a screen, or if you're really on your game, you know, read a book. Like, I didn't get hit with it that bad. It was just, I got to stay home for 10 days or 5 days or whatever it is. Oh no, whatever am I going to do? I'm going to do Lorehaven stuff. I'm going to do novel stuff. I'm going to read books. I may even play some video games and do something that's completely a waste of time except for recreation, Sabbath style rest. It was kind of a way for me to not work so hard and maybe avoid the earliest stages of workaholism. Creative workaholism is still workaholism. And just remember that God has given us Sabbath rest. You know, so maybe the lockdowns, all of that stuff, in addition to helping us remember our own mortality, just in some cases helped us remember the need to rest, to recreate, to follow God's example in creating the world, working 6 days and then resting a seventh. And I hope that I've carried those patterns forward every day when I can, not just every week.
The other thing the lockdowns did for me was get me to exercise, because, you know, I work behind a desk, and so I do video editing and other things related to media production. And so I was blessed to get to work remotely, but it also meant I went stir crazy a ton. And I had to get out. And thankfully, we live right by a jogging trail. And so I got out pretty much every day and walked for half an hour or more, sometimes an hour, sometimes 2 hours. I would often take my kids with me. I was trying to get healthier, because one of the things I battle is type 2 diabetes. And it's something that runs in my family for about 4 generations. So, you know, lost a lot of weight and got in better shape overall. And that was a good thing. And it led to some other things reading wise we'll get into, but, you know, I think it really showed me the connection between physical fitness and mental health, because maintaining good mental health was often my number one goal, and not just for me, but for our whole family. And so we kind of got into this rhythm, Stephen, where every night I would show all the memes or funny things that I had saved up for my kids. And I'd started this trend of saving up animal memes. And I think it was the year before that, I'd put them all together in like a photo book, like you get at Walgreens for Christmas. And now that's become an annual tradition. I think we're up to volume 5 now. But yeah, really battling the darkness within became a real, you know, important focus, because it was very bleak, and there was just that sense of dread all the time, you know. And even if you weren't worried about the virus, I think it was easy for us to worry about how society was changing and how things were getting more restrictive, and there were all kinds of mandates that were not very popular, and a lot of restrictions on other things that were very concerning. But the other thing I did during this time to battle that was I joined the Babylon Bee headline forum, and I started pitching headlines to the writers. And I've had about a dozen of those get published since then. And again, that was just a great way to take the focus off myself and what I was anxious about or upset about, and try to make other people laugh. And at first it's like, oh, I hope to make it big and get an article, you know, go viral. And there have been a few of those, but pretty soon it became about the community of other headline writers. And it really became this little just fun little world to play around with, where we would look at the news and just try to make a joke about it, or just joke about ourselves, really, like our own lives and all the weird and silly things that we do, because, you know, really the key to mental health is laughing at yourself.
Well, another good thing about the COVID-19 pandemic is, with a few exceptions that people might see fuzzy pictures of in the AI images shared on the internet, it did not turn the human race into mutants. So we remain basically human, even if the viruses are mutating. I don't think we are, which oddly enough makes me think of our second sponsor, a new arrival here, author Liam Corley, with a novel called Changelings Insurgents. Commander Tauron didn't travel from the 26th century to kidnap a forgotten healer, but he will if that's what it takes to save his mutant son. To end the war between humans and their mutant offspring, Tauron recruits a criminal, a scientist, and a scholar to search for genes that will purge the mutation, but trusting each other turns out to be the real fight. Changelings Insurgents is a debut science fiction novel by Liam Corley, published by Millspeak Books, and it is available wherever fine books are sold. Changelings Insurance, you can see that link in our show notes for episode 202, or go to lorehaven.com/podcast. Lockdowns challenged how and why we read. That is our chapter 2 heading, and Zach already alluded to this. In fact, I was inspired to write this section based on something Zach said in a previous episode about God, his kind of fan theory there, but our sovereign God judging people by giving them more of what they crave, screen time. Now, it's not the only sin of our age, but it's certainly a temptation, just as previous generations may have struggled with newer technologies for communication, like the radio or picture tube television or motion pictures or even dial-up internet. Now we've got screens everywhere. It's not just the thing you come home to after school when you got the personal computer or you have your TV set or your PlayStation 1 or whatever it is. Now the screen is in your pocket. You are living in the future, and just think about your kid version of yourself if you're over the age of 30 or so, what it would be like to take a TV, music station, radio, everything everywhere with you all the time in your pocket, almost always on. And by the way, with now, with a lot of people with the regular phone plans, unlimited wireless internet. See, I used to have a smartphone and like you got 2 gigs of the connection and you had to use them sparingly, almost like dial up. And once it was gone, it was gone. You may have gotten the super slow connection behind everybody else who is still paying for it. But now it's unlimited, basically unlimited for my phone plan. And so this contributes to the dopamine addiction and the doom scrolling that we've talked about earlier. Now, this I think may have continued regardless of the lockdowns, and it's still a problem, even with the lockdowns largely gone. But with all this screen time, like very few people, I think, are focusing exclusively on ebooks when they're using their phones. You know, I myself already talked about this temptation to pick up my phone and not read a physical book that's right in front of me. And by the way, this wasn't homework. I was reading this book for fun. Yeah, it was nonfiction. It was Life in the Negative World by Aaron Wren, a book about, you know, Christians and how we are to engage in a world that largely views Christianity as bigoted and suspicious at best, or actively harmful towards society at worst. And, you know, he's a really interesting writer, and he is talking about strategies we have to cope for that. So it's kind of related to what we do at Lorehaven, and I'm really interested in the topic. But that dumb notification kept pinging me. Hey, why don't you go check the social, huh? Why don't you go see if somebody replied to that email? I was craving a little dopamine hit. Not cool. I feel like I'm, you know, standing in front of a room for, you know, Dopamine Addicts Anonymous and saying, hi, my name is Steven. Hi, Steven. And I'm hooked on micro doses of dopamine caused by excessive scrolling on my smartphone. Not cool. And there are strategies that we could talk about later for how to deal with that. But right there, it was just brute force. I'm like, nope, I'm putting my phone over there. I'm going to read my book. I want to read my book. So shut up, brain. Shut up. Many issues are still going on in culture like that. But I think there's also that challenge to the reason for reading. And I don't want to retread our episode 200, which is, you know, the reason for reading is the glory of God by worshiping him, by enjoying works that people have made, especially works that are intended to glorify him. But let's talk about the flip side of that. We've got all these counterfeit reasons for reading and these counterfeit reasons for doing everything. We've got these publishers who seem to have lost sight on why they're making stories. No, I'm not talking about any Christian publishers I know of necessarily, especially not sponsors of this show, but some of the big guys, you know, Zach, you were talking about this earlier, like they are giant corporations who seem to think that reading is for any reason other than the glory of God, to pursue trends or to get into some fake religion or get into some political or social cause. Some kind of identity religion seems to be the main motive for making some of these books, and that includes fiction, and that includes some fantastical stories too. So a lot of that, I think, was exacerbated by the lockdowns, because when you have some of the old assumptions called into question by some major event like this, and you feel haunted by your mortality, maybe you as a publisher start wondering, hey, why are we making all these books when people are dying and there's all this social upheaval and people are dying, you know? Well, maybe we need to make books not just for entertainment, but we need to make books to stop the people from dying. And so the false religions are even more potent there, and they spread maybe even faster than the COVID-19 virus itself.
Yeah, there's become a really big problem in mainstream publishing, as you've said. It's become this monoculture where every book looks like every other book. And now you go to the big bookstores and you see these tables where every book looks like every other one that's it's this or that, you know, social justice or political trend. And it's gotten so lame, frankly. It's people chasing their own tails just while they trace the latest trend. And it's so predictable. The similar problem has happened in the online world. So I remember back in 2020, not only were physical lockdowns happening, but information lockdowns were happening. There was a lot of censorship that was happening on all the social media sites, whether it was text, image, or video based. And now we've learned quite a bit about who and how that was being driven, which this is not the podcast to go into that, but you can find out that information elsewhere. But what really emerged during this time was two things to answer both of these problems. One was a lot more indie publishing of books in small presses, people that were publishing books that no one else wanted to touch, and also a lot of independent media or alternative media. So this would be Rumble instead of YouTube. This would be Substack instead of Blogger. This would be some other social media sites, which didn't work out so well, instead of Twitter, but now Twitter is a lot more open. So that's kind of interesting. But the thing that's really stayed as a steady platform for, you know, free and independent media is podcasting, which is a big reason why we got into podcasting. Podcasting cannot be censored. Now, certain things might get disfavored or whatever on YouTube or certain social media sites, but no one can turn off our podcast except us. It relies on a censorship-proof technology called RSS, which is Web 1.0. And I got into a lot of podcasts. Earlier, I mentioned I would go on a lot of walks during the lockdowns. That was just to get out and, again, tackle mental health. But I found a lot of podcasts that were addressing things that concern me, happening in culture. And through that, I found a lot of just independent blogs that were doing deep dives into cultural issues. And even just different issues going on in the evangelical or Southern Baptist world that I'm in, the ministry world that I'm in, you know, there were so many things going on all at once in 2020. And I've been able to just build a great network of thinkers and writers and speakers that I've followed since then. I've gotten to know a lot of people that are just very bold and courageous people. And so it's helped lead me from doom scrolling to what I call hope scrolling, where I am finding good things to like and share and bookmark and whatever. And I even try to get into a habit sometimes, Stephen, where when I find something that makes me laugh out loud or just really nod my head, I just quit right there, end on a high note. Now, of course, as you said, there's the internal dopamine meter that's like, oh, 5 minutes later, I need to go get more. Because I have, like, believe it or not, I've turned off almost all my notifications, and I have for a long time. But you're right, it's that internal notification that's very hard to deal with. And I'm right there with you at the DAA, Dopamine Addicts Anonymous.
Duh. Yeah, it's not the best acronym in the world. So there's kind of three main issues there that inhibit our reading. First of all, the producers don't know why reading exists anymore. You know, the, as we drift further and further from God, and I know what I sound like here, you know, like preacher in the 80s or something. But it is true. If you make a copy of a copy of a copy of the original reason for why we print and distribute books, then the copy loses cohesion. Like, you no longer know what you're looking at. So the culture does move further from God, and it moves, it's got to move somewhere. So it's going to be drawn by another gravity toward other alien evil reasons, or just selfish reasons, other religions that try to explain why we should make books. So that's the publisher's fault, you could say, but even the publisher is beholden to some kind of a reader interest. I just wonder how much like organic reader interest they can actually measure once they get that big and get that trapped in the web of the big company cultures that they're into there. But then on the reader side, as I mentioned, yeah, it's the doom scrolling problem, the dopamine addiction and all of that. But then Zach, like you mentioned, for example, you know, turning toward it sounds like nonfiction podcasts, you know, worldview, yeah, cultural engagement, stuff like that. Right. So I think in our case, we've been able to handle it, hopefully, and not lose sight of fiction and the hope scrolling and the good things that God has given humans the ability to make, particularly in the fantastical genres. I believe, though, that some people may be getting so deep into the nonfiction stuff and the political stuff and the debates and all of that, that those things, along with other stresses caused by lockdowns, like career changes or you need to move or someone's in long-term care or something like that, all of those prioritize what would seem to be real-world practical needs that no longer leave you with the time or even financial resources to spend on just entertainment. You know, if you have to go into meat and potatoes mode, I get it. But if you start to believe that humans were only meant for meat and potatoes, or there's a war going on all the time and I cannot put down my weapons for anything, in order to enjoy a story or even whistle a little tune with your other soldiers around the campfire down in the ditch. Like, no, God has made us, yes, for fighting sometimes. We've got to do that in a world of sin. But like we talked about in our culture war episode, God ultimately has made us to enjoy these kinds of stories, to be more fully human, because we are asking what if questions and then fleshing out these scenarios with imagined characters and imaginary worlds. That is something one way or another we are meant to do. And if we are hooked on either the dopamine or these false religions or this kind of practicality, I get it temporarily. If there's a war on, like, we don't got time to have tea and crumpets. Like, I understand. But, you know, even the people who said that back then, they hopefully had a healthy culture enough in the UK or wherever it was, to realize that once the war was over, you could get back to the tea and crumpets and, you know, the little walks in the countryside and those good things that people are made to do. I don't want to lose that. And so that's why we have kept this podcast focused on the good stuff. We want to find the best kinds of stories and not only enjoy them, but understand why we're enjoying them, even if there is a war on, whether it's a culture war or a war against a bad virus.
Yeah. And I think fiction reading very much factors into surviving the war, because so much of the war the last few years has been not just information, but it's been a demoralization campaign. You know, there's so many ways in which every facet of society that we've taken for granted has come under attack. And it leads to that doom scrolling, because it leads to that sense of maybe everything's going to end. You know, it's like we've all seen our favorite restaurants get shut down. I can think of two off the top of my head that we used to go to all the time, gone. You know, and we started to think, is that going to happen to all the other things that I love? And we can adopt this very pessimistic view of the world. And, you know, something that I came across the other day, this is a quote from a book called Character by Robert McKee. And he says, quote, "In non-realistic epics such as Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, The Princess Bride, and Game of Thrones, tyrants never survive, but heroes do. In realistic epics such as Spartacus, 1984, Braveheart, and Lord of the Flies, tyrants always survive, heroes never do." This made me realize why I love speculative fiction, Stephen, because we get that sense of hope. Yes, it's this fantastical world in outer space or in some other fantasy world, but the fact that the heroes survive and the tyrants do not, that gives us hope, and that gives us that motivation to keep going. And we know that, I mean, we read the news, we see a lot of good men fall, we see a lot of bad men stay in charge, but we know it's not always going to be like that. We know, especially when Christ comes back, it will be, everything will be set right. And I think that's what speculative fiction does, is it gives us that hope of a better future. Because I think a lot of what has happened in the last few years is we've been sold this lie that the world is getting worse and worse. And okay, some things are getting worse, but that the future is always going to be worse. And I think the future can be better. I mean, you know, and what really helps ground this is reading Judges. And now we're in 1 Samuel. That's what my family's reading. And you see these cycles play out where there's freedom and there's prosperity, and then there's idolatry, and then there's subjugation and oppression and famine or plague or just oppression from foreign invaders, you know, and then the cycle repeats. And I think, yeah, all the nonfiction stuff can be helpful and informative, but it can lead us to this point of thinking everything will only get worse and it won't get better. And fiction helps us remember that that's not true. Things will get better. What's been hard for me, Stephen, and we'll talk about this here in chapter 3, it's hard for me now to watch a whole movie because I could watch TV shows and, you know, in one sitting, but man, a whole movie, especially the longer ones, like I have to break it up. And often it's because I'm scrolling and I get more, you know, in tune with that than the movie.
Oh yeah. I'm actually better at ignoring my phone during a movie or during even a show. After one hiccup, we managed to come back and watch the rest of the Avatar and Last Airbender live action on Netflix. Overall, very good, by the way. I definitely recommend it. And I don't feel the temptation when I'm watching a movie. And I presumably didn't feel that temptation when you and I, Zach, were watching Dune Part 2 over the weekend, which presumably was awesome, like everybody said. So everybody should watch that as well. That doesn't, that's not a struggle for me, but I understand that it's going to be a struggle for a lot more folks. I'll talk in the next section just a little bit more about things that I think some better habits and some methods that Zach and I have been trying to build back those attention span muscles. First of all, I want to do something a little bit different for sponsor 3. Once again, Realm Makers, because all this reminds me of the one Realm Makers that kind of wasn't, but kind of was. That was the virtual conference in the year 2020. Originally, it was going to be the first Realm Makers conference in New Jersey. Yeah, that was one of the ones in New Jersey, not St. Louis. But that ended up not happening. So we ended up doing the whole thing as a virtual conference. And yet I happen to know that that too was a challenge that led to the Realm Makers conference leveling up. First of all, just more personally, I think it created scarcity. Like there was the one year I wasn't able to go to Realm Makers other than missing the 14 and 15 conferences, 2014, 2015. So I really missed seeing everybody. I really missed having it live, although I really enjoyed the virtual conference and I took the days off and we treated it as if it were as real as we could. But there was just nothing like coming back to the 2021 conference the next year. When we were able to have it for real. And that was a big risk that the conference organizers took, making sure that they could even have the usual amount of people in there and whether or not people were going to be able to make it in the usual numbers in the hotel. And it ended up working out. And thank God for that narrow escape, because kind of gave everybody this experience together. A lot of folks went to the virtual conference, but then back to the physical conferences. I'm just so glad that Scott and Becky Miner stuck it out, that they're still doing Realm Makers, even this year, live conference and virtual conference. So that's why they're sponsor here. The 2024 conference is going to be once again in St. Louis. All-star faculty for Christian creatives who go to these classes to learn the art and craft and purpose of writing fantastical stories. But even those who are fans can go to the conference. First of all, you can go to the banquet that is on Friday night where we announce the Realm Award winners. That's going to be paid, but you can go. You can see people dressed up in costume, all that good stuff. And then Saturday is when you can actually attend the book festival, which is where the vendor hall is open to all, and all the authors who won awards are signing autographs. And you can meet your favorites and see us at Lorehaven. We'll have our booth there too. Get the dates, get all the information at realmmakers.com. You can also get it in our show notes for episode 202. or go to lorehaven.com/podcast. Yeah, that conference is July 18th through 20th, and registration is open now for the Realm Makers event. And I think Zach's going to be there too. He's always there when he can be. So definitely see us at Lorehaven at the Realm Makers conference. All right, chapter three now. We've already alluded to this, but let's end on yet another high note. I think that ultimately we can say safely that lockdowns made us stronger through challenge. I'm thinking of the best kinds of stories where you have an antagonist. You know, the hero wants to do something, but, you know, is still at home or still in his comfortable life or whatever. And then you have the inciting incident and somebody shows up or something terrible happens. And you have to get thrown out into the wider world where you will be tested over and over. And that's the hero's journey. In 2020, my family made a lot of big decisions. But I think more personally, I can trace some of my more serious approach to creative goals back to that time. I've mentioned that suddenly time felt very short. And so in those years since the lockdowns began, I can say here that I have become almost a legalist, and not in a bad way, about how I schedule my time, particularly Monday through Saturday. It's pretty regimented. I've got like blocks on my calendar, and you know, I'm trying to have fun with it, and I don't think this will work for everybody. But it has enabled me to hit more goals than I thought I would in both reading and writing. And so if I'm putting down that I'm trying to write and finish a book, like I'm trying to keep track of those, I'm trying to set goals like, okay, one audiobook a month, I'm now paying for that. And I've actually used up all of my credit. Actually, right now, Zach, I have two credits because I couldn't decide what to read during February. And I ran a little late with my January reading choice, which is Caller by J.J. Fisher, by the way, last year's Realm Award winner. So we're going to try to have J.J. Fisher on the show this month, actually, for our next series. Really good book, really great fantasy. I finished that, I think, just this past Wednesday, so I need to get another book. Audiobooks. I definitely read a lot more audiobooks. Just by paying for it, for one thing, those things are not cheap. An audiobook is actually more expensive than a movie ticket, but it lasts longer. And I think that it is definitely worth it if you choose the right books. So that's how I've been getting through a lot more books. I have been hacking at my TBR pile, which after every Realm Makers keeps getting bigger and bigger because I tell myself no more books. And then, of course, you know, I fulfill the cliche and I come home with more books. And, you know, it's a thing. It's a thing that readers do, or at least the good readers do. And sometimes I'm not a good reader, but I'm trying to do better, not just with audiobooks, but actually reading print books. And come to think of it, I've not been reading ebooks at all very much. No, I've been reading a lot of articles on my e-reader on my phone, but I've not been reading books. I've got plenty of paper books, so I've been reading those instead. So I think just thinking the time is short and then using that time to invest more in books, both nonfiction and fiction, but especially audiobooks, that's been a good result of some of the nonsense brought about by the lockdown time.
Well, we got a bookshelf built there. I guess it was right after the lockdowns. It was 2021, I believe, when we got that built. It's sitting next to me here now. I didn't do the proper, you know, Zoom thing and put the bookcase behind my desk, so I look really smart.
About how smart you are, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't really work the way with the geometry in this in our study here that I do the podcast from, but that's okay because it still holds hundreds of books. And yeah, I definitely started, you know, first it was, I need more bookshelf space to fit all the books I already have. And then it was, hey, I want to fill up this bookshelf. And now it's like, okay, I need a new bookshelf.
You're right when you say you have no books. You have five books at home and the sixth book is not your husband. Or yeah. However the meme goes, I forget. I just gummed that up.
Well, and that's, you know, I don't collect books anymore. I collect bookshelves. And so but the next project that I've got my sights on is turning the door to the study into a bookshelf, like a hidden door.
Thing, oh, one of like those hidden doors. Yeah. Oh, look those up. Those are really expensive. So yeah. I hope you're planning to stay in your house because then somebody's going to come along and put your house on one of those goofy houses for sale on Zillow.
The Zillow
websites.
Gone wild. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, yeah, the carpenter that we hired to do the bookshelf that's in here, he really wants to do that for us, and I think that'll be a better deal than Home Depot or whatever.
Okay, well, if you find someone who's into that sort of thing, then yeah, I say go for it. We also, when we moved to our new house in the fall of 2020, bookshelves were a top priority, but I just remembered lockdowns also interfered with that. Suddenly bookshelves were a scarce resource. The ones from IKEA. Literally, it was like trying to find a Tickle Me Elmo in 1996. I could not get the things. And then when the pieces started arriving from Sweden or wherever they were being shipped from, I could only get like the little ones. And then I could only get like little part of the big ones, and then I could only get the big ones and the little ones, but not the little brackets that would enable you to get the corner piece so that you could round the corner, like kind of a J curve there. And I think I still was trying to go about finding pieces for these bookshelves that Christmas, but they are all put together. They really look really nice. You can almost see them making me look really smart when I do Zoom calls from the office, but I don't record in the office. I have a separate recording space for that. So maybe we'll get some more bookshelves in here sometime.
Well, I mentioned earlier how the library we were talking about that I've started going to as well, they have these audiobooks called Playaway. It's like a, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a really old iPod, like just plastic. And it's got physical buttons, and it takes one AA battery. It's got a headphone jack. And all you can do on it is listen to that book. And it comes in a case, kind of like a VHS case. And we've really liked those in our family. I like going on walks with them. I like falling asleep to a book. It's sort of like a Kindle for audiobooks, but except it's only just one audiobook. Audiobooks are my new thing now when I'm going walking. And specifically what I'm doing is I'm listening to books that I've already read or that I was rereading, like The Wheel of Time. Because I'm trying to follow the advice of C.S. Lewis that whenever you finish a new book, go back to an old book. And there's something about listening to a book that I've already read that's so fun to listen to, especially when it's really good voice acting. You know, Stephen, I'm about to pull the trigger on my own audiobook service because I can't find all the audiobooks I want at the library. They only have so many of the Wheel of Time books, for example. And there's also the Lord of the Rings books that I want to get, and I want to own those. I'm going to try out the service called Libro.fm, Libro, because number one, I'm not really wanting to pay into the Audible service for a number of reasons. But with Libro, you get to own the actual MP3 files for the audiobook. And you can download them to your computer, burn them to a CD or USB stick. You keep them. They're not, covered in DRM where you can only play them in that app. And then if, you know, all kinds of things can happen and you lose access to it. So I really like this service. Now, they've also got an app where you can listen to it that way. But I really like getting to own things and having it, you know, not just be a subscription, because I can cancel the subscription and I'll still own it. Now, to be fair, that is true with Audible. You don't have to keep paying to listen to the ones you've already owned, but they are, you know, they're DRM'd, which if you know what that means, you know that you probably don't like that. So that's my little tip for audiobook listeners.
After Zach's anti-endorsement of that service, I just want to say that Audible does not hope you've enjoyed this program. I, for one, am actually using Audible, and I guess I need to do some more reading about DRM and such. That's one of those things that operates more in my peripheral vision. But I do like quality audiobooks. Like, that is how I first listened to a really great audiobook of Dracula that I've now listened to maybe two or three times. All of the Andy Serkis Middle Earth titles are now on there, along with other narrators. It's always trying to sell me some dumb book, though, when I pull it up. Like, no, I really don't want to read about the Prince of Wales being a spare instead of an heir. Like, I think I got the gist, you know, and this doesn't really help me with my life. And I do tend to be a little bit more practical in my audiobook choices, by the way. I have a kind of a variant of the Sherlock Holmes idea of not cluttering up the brain attic. And yet I feel that fiction, specifically fantastical fiction, is extremely practical for me, given my personality and given how I learn and how I want to imagine and the type of person I want to become. So
I've been collecting a series of reading tips that others have taught me that I'm putting into practice. And I just wanted to share that list really quick because I think
I need this.
Yeah, for you, our listener, if you're struggling to get back into a reading habit, I found a couple of things that help. Number one is, it's going to sound weird, but get an accountability partner or group. Set goals and share your progress every month, because that can be really encouraging to get to tell someone every month, hey, I read this book and I read that book. Because the reality is we're adults in our midlife and there are so many other pressures coming at us now. You know, Stephen, I used to read for hours every day in high school and even in college a little bit, but you know, I didn't quite have all the same responsibilities I have now. So you have to kind of fight for it. And like you said, you have to make it a goal, which seems weird, but that's just where we are. So secondly is I try to read whole chapters at a time and I try not to get up from a book until I get to the end of at least one chapter.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that really helps. You mentioned this earlier, but keeping internet connected devices out of reach. So putting them in a different room if it comes down to it, putting your computer to sleep. Or, you know, there are times where I have to take notes or want to take notes on a book with a device. So I use this app called Freedom, and you can set it to block all distracting websites, social media, whatever you want to, you know, it's very customizable and for whatever length of time you want. And you just cannot use those apps or websites, you know, when that dopamine trigger goes off. That really helps. Now, I mostly use that for other things, for productivity, but it does help for reading. And then lastly, I've been getting more into reading some novellas. So a friend of mine has gotten me into the Murderbot series, which are really short books. You can read them over a weekend. And another tip kind of along with that is pick up a book that you've only half read. That's easier to finish a book than it is to start a whole new book. And there's something about you know, Dave Ramsey has like the snowball method, right? With paying off debt, like start with the littlest debt you have and build from there. And I think that's a really easy hack with books. If you've got a book you're almost done with and you put aside for some reason, just go and finish it. Even if you don't think you'll like it, it gives you that motivation to keep reading some more.
All those are really great tips. And I want to put those into practice. I appreciate, yeah, reading at least one chapter because that's a natural division in the book. And then sometimes momentum takes over. You finish chapter two and like, well, maybe I'll just do chapter three. And the difference is, unlike a snack or something, the book is almost entirely good for you. Even if you disagree with it, if you know what you're disagreeing with, it is an altogether healthy experience and you are connecting with something that is intrinsic to humanity, writing tangible pages with words. Ideas, good stuff, just so that you are indeed reading for glory of God.
Well, to you, our listener, we want to hear how the pandemic changed you for the better, for the worse, or just what's different. And we'd like to know, how did the lockdown shape your own reading experience? And what are you doing now to continue or to change your habits reading-wise? So send us a note to podcast@lorehaven.com, comment on the show notes page at lorehaven.com, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
Next on Fantastical Truth, since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, Jesus himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is, the devil. That is from the book of Hebrews, and we are now entering the pre-resurrection Sunday season in which we celebrate Christ's suffering, death, and resurrection. So this month, we will begin our new series, He Saves Us, about our hero's victory over Satan, sin, and suffering. You can read about that in the Bible, which of course is the best book that you want to be reading, whether or not you're trying to get through the whole thing in 1 year, whether or not you're reading it on a page or with an audiobook. But again, regardless of what type of reading you're doing or what you are reading, definitely read for the glory of God. This is something wonderful that God has given us. Literacy, making books, reading books. Share the best books that you know with friends. And of course, stay tuned to Lorehaven to find the best Christian-made fantastical fiction that we have found as we continue to seek and find His fantastical truth.